This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
All of these fabulous women who had taken the plunge and created their own business, they were all alone. But in reality, that's just bullshit. I mean, no one has their shit together, not even me. The product has to stand for something. You have to stand for something. You have to have a voice, because the voice is what's going to attract like-minded.
Welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, episode number 77 with me, Simon Dell. And thank you very much for tuning in. If you have been here before, welcome back. If this is your first time, then thank you for coming along. And there are 76 other episodes for you to listen to. Today on the show, we have a lady based in Sydney whose name is Sophie Musumeci, a brilliant Italian name. I love it so much. And I think I pronounced that correctly. She is the founder and CEO of an organization called Real Entrepreneur Women. So she will tell you all about that, but it is in effect, an in-person and online mastermind network community for women. She has had a background in change management. She is an expert at relationship marketing and personal branding, and she is highly entertaining. And she said to me right at the start, before we started, that she wouldn't be swearing. And then the air turns blue. So it's very entertaining, and she is full of passion and enthusiasm for her organization and the members of her organization. So if you are female, it is a definite listen to podcast. If you're male, you'll learn just as much as if you listen to anybody else. So stay on the line and listen to Sophie. We will get the usual housekeeping out of the way. Please rate and review us on iTunes. I cannot keep asking that enough. I'm going to come round your houses with a stick if you don't start doing it. I won't really, because I have no idea where you live, of course. If you're looking for someone to help you with your podcast, please talk to Gilberto at thepodcastboss.com. He is the man that puts all of these together as we go. And then if you want to come and talk to me, I am Simon Dell on Twitter, or I am Simon Dell on LinkedIn. And if you wish to chat to myself or Matt about what we do in business, we are digital marketing consultants. Our business is called Paper Planes, funnily enough. And you can find us at flypaperplanes.co. That is about it. Yeah, that's pretty much about it. So look, let's jump into the interview with Sophie, and hope you enjoy it. Okay, so welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, Sophie Musumeci. Did I get that right?
You nailed it. Well done.
Cool. Wonderful Italian name there. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for today.
So let's get straight into it and find out a little bit about you, your background. You're down in Sydney at the moment. So talk to me about what you're currently doing at the moment.
Well, currently I'm running, I'm the CEO and founder of Real Entrepreneur Women. So we're a real deal in person and online mastermind networking community. We have local groups all across Sydney and Melbourne, and then we run online communities where women get together, they get to support each other, pitch their business to each other, and just get support, like really having someone in their corner backing them, that accountability. So we just had our third birthday in the community, which is exciting. And cool. In the last few months, we've branched out and kind of grown into more of a mastermind higher end offering, which has been very exciting and the reason why I've been able to leave my corporate job finally.
I did see that. I saw a lot of the stuff that you were doing, you're sort of running in parallel with a corporate job. Yeah. I guess that kind of kept you fairly busy doing both of those things.
Absolutely. And then add in a couple of kids. I didn't realize actually how stressed I was until the day after I finally had ended my contract. And I enjoyed the work that I did in my corporate career. I loved it. You know, I was doing leadership and coaching and they were listening to me and we're doing right. Some really fun, innovative stuff. But at the end of the day, trying to juggle it all and trying to switch my head from, you know, the role of being that leadership person in that environment and then, you know, running a business and being on the ground with my clients and my members and then being a mom and a wife, it was a lot.
Yeah. I can imagine. Your background is in change management, and you've obviously done a lot of that through Westpac, CommBank, and IAG, and so on and so forth. Explain to everyone for the non-corporate people out there, exactly what a change management person does on a day-to-day basis.
Well, hopefully my husband's listening to this, because after 10 years in change management, he still doesn't know how to explain it. So we predominantly work on projects where a company wants to change. They might want to implement a new system. They might want to outsource. They might want to restructure. And a change manager looks at the people impacts of that change, because normally a company they'll build a fabulous system. They'll kind of throw it over the fence and expect people to use it. But then the people haven't been brought along the journey, and they don't understand why. Yeah. They need to use this new system and the benefits and how it links in with all of their other processes and stuff. So a change manager really looks at that strategy from a people view and helps people to adapt to the changes. And so it just becomes part of how we do things. And from a business perspective, why that's really important is you get the benefits, because the benefits are actually linked to people using the system because it's faster or, you know, whatever that might be. So, yeah, it's quite in depth, but I loved it. It was great for that time.
And a lot of the stuff you did, as I said, there was in banking. And I guess there's been a fair bit of change in banking in the past 10 odd years or so. So I suspect that was a challenge internally with the banks. They always strike me as being not the most flexible organisations in the world.
No. And that was one of the reasons why I did leave in the end. I mean, I was working and doing a fabulous job. We had really great results, but, you know, from an income perspective, and then I live in Sydney, and then once we started to have kids, it became very difficult for me to be able to earn that money as a permanent employee and put my child in childcare, where childcare was like $140 a day. So that's kind of where the entrepreneurial kind of burner came inside. And we just knew we had to find a different way, because two corporate parents didn't really fit for the families that we wanted to create.
Yeah, childcare is a just ridiculous cost.
It's a real pain.
I just leave them in a field and let them run wild for 8 hours. That'd be fine for me. I've got no problems with that whatsoever.
It's funny you say that. So I've got Toby, who's 7, and Stella, who just turned 5, and so she'll start school next year. And, you know, there's this conversation with all the parents whose kids are leaving childcare for the last year, and they're like, oh, my God, the money we'll have back.
Oh, do you know, I said exactly the same thing to my wife the other week. I said, because we're just in the process of building a house, we're going to start building a house soon, and you know, we've done all the budgets, and so, and, you know, we're looking at the cost of childcare, and I said, but you realise in about 4 years' time, we'll actually have all of that money to spend. And the way my wife's eyes lit up at that point, it was beautiful.
Well, it's funny, because now we're looking at, you know, for high school, do we go private? You know, what are our options? Yeah. And I'm like, well, it's actually probably the same price as what we were paying for childcare, but we think about it so differently.
You're all the way, you're back into it again.
Money, so bring on the international holidays again and the extension on the house. Can't wait.
Anyway, let's not whinge about our kids and how much money they drain out of us. Talk to me about the first of all, it was real entrepreneur mums, and then it sort of became real entrepreneur women.
Yeah.
What sort of?
So, well, back to the kids kind of part of it. I had, we'd had Toby, and we had got a nanny because we couldn't get enough childcare days. And I came home and realised that Toby had picked up more of his Polish nanny's mannerisms than he had of mine or Daniel's.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, it was a real kind of massive slap in the face. I mean, my mum was a stay-at-home mum, and I think we just missed the importance of that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that people did this. I didn't know that you could just go and start a business. And so I initially got started in network marketing. Well, and that was great. I learned a lot around how to grow a business and how to grow your network and relationships. But the thing was that I'd be going to these networking events that were all around, and some of them are fantastic. But the thing is that all of these fabulous women who had taken the plunge and created their own business, left corporate jobs, high-paying jobs, they were all alone.
Yeah.
And look, family and friends are great, but they just don't understand what it's like to grow a business, why you have this desire inside of you that you want to go and create something. You know, you have your family saying, why don't you just go back and get a job? So we had a look at this, and my old business partner, who's moved on now, we were like, what if we were to create something of our own? And so we kind of tested it with 20 women. We tapped them on the shoulder and we're like, this is what we're thinking. This is how the structure would work. And, you know, you get to pitch your business and focus on referrals. But at the end of the day, we'd have each other's back and we'd be there and we'd support each other. And they all just jumped in like on the spot. And I remember bringing them all over to my kitchen table and we're going through this little pamphlet that we'd made, you know, this one pager on our vision. And it kind of morphed from there. And initially we based it around, you know, real entrepreneur moms. The word real is because we're real. Like no one has all this shit together. You know, like Instagram filters make it look like, oh my God, everyone lives the most amazing glammed up life. But in reality, that's just bullshit. I mean, no one has their shit together, not even me. I mean, I'm getting better, but that's just not reality and that's unattainable. And no one wants to be part of something that you feel like shit because you don't feel like you count. You don't feel like you're part of it. So the word real was super important to me. Entrepreneur was ridiculous because every time we then wrote the word, we would have to stop and figure out how the hell to spell it.
Yeah, do you know what? I still do that when I type it. I'm like, E-U or U-E-R? Where's the U go? Yeah, is it or is it how many E's? Yeah, anyway, yeah.
It is just, I mean, we were sitting there looking at each other going, why did we do this? And then mums because that related to us. But then over time as we grew and we grew really quick, we started to realize that we were attracting a lot of hobbyists. And the word mum and mumpreneur can sometimes come with a bit of a stigma that we're not serious.
Right.
And one of the big things I'm really passionate about, one of the things I've done in my corporate career is a lot of customer stuff. So, you know, net promoter score, you know, listening to your customer, getting feedback and then implementing changes in the organization based on what they think and feel. And so I surveyed all of my members. We had over 100 and really tried to understand, you know, one, what are we doing that's great? And what can we, you know, keep growing and improve on? But what's really not working? And one of the big questions for me was, what resonates better with you and why? Real entrepreneur mums or real entrepreneur women?
Right.
And it was over 85% said women. And the reasonings were, you know, that they view themselves as a serious businesswoman. And the word mum to them kind of felt like they were just kind of, you know, hobbying, just kind of, you know, looking for a few clients and just happy, you know, kind of growing their business at a certain level. Whereas these women have big friggin' plans for themselves. So that was all the validation that I needed. And so we announced it at our end of year celebration event last year and everyone was so excited. And I can't tell you, we did the rebrand and the photo shoot and, you know, the energy and the change in the colors and everything is just absolutely magnified. It's incredible how one word can have a huge switch in how people relate to your business.
That mumpreneur now has got a bit of stigma attached to it. It is a bit of a kind of a, you know, it's not nice, but it's a bit of a joke tag. It's like, you know, perhaps people aren't taking it necessarily as seriously as they should, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And there was someone that I used to follow who labeled herself the single mumpreneur. And I kind of went, well, that's even more awkward because as soon as you get yourself a boyfriend or a husband, that's your whole brand gone out the window. Mm-hmm. You know, I can completely understand. I completely sort of understand where you come from. It's a shame that sort of has generated that, you know, that stigma. But so talk to me because obviously, you know, one of your key focuses was relationship marketing. So explain to me what you see relationship marketing as.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, if you think about how most people do business, I'm saying most, but generally, we love to talk about a business that we love. For instance, you know, I love Mr. Lind. The owner is one of my clients, but I just can't help talk about it everywhere I go. And it's like a Tupperware container, but the lids are attached and they stack in each other. So you never lose a lid. It's fabulous. Yeah. So I'm a massive raving fan for that business, not because they pay me, because I genuinely love the product and they give me great customer service, right? So we just, and we do this all the time. You're at a barbecue and you talk around, oh my God, your hair looks great. Oh, you've got to, you know, my hairdresser. I saw this movie the other day. So word of mouth is nothing new. But what we can do is if we can create a cultured environment, which again, I'm super passionate about that coming from my corporate career.
Yeah.
If we can create the right cultured environment where people can build genuine, real relationships where they support each other, back each other, and we are deeply understanding about each other's business and where we want to go, you know, compared to some of the other referral networking groups out there where you are kind of pressured to refer or you are asked to leave, we knew that if women have the right relationships with someone where they know, like, and trust you, then they'll do anything for you. And that, and we've seen this, like, I see this every single day in my community. And we're not just talking about the referrals and being the raving fans, but also, you know, when times are tough and some of these women get to breaking point because things just aren't going right. You know, what they thought they wanted to do just doesn't end up becoming because of a number of reasons, or they don't have the support. And it's not just women that go through this. Everyone goes through this. But because we focus on building the strong relationships with each other, these women are deeply there for them. Like, they back them, they pick them up, they dust them off. You know, what's going on? They'll help each other out. They'll learn from each other. They'll share ideas from each other. You know, we don't hold our cards close to our chest. Like, we're not about, oh, well, you can't see what I'm doing because maybe you'll steal my ideas. We're all about abundance, right? So relationship marketing is kind of, it keeps blossoming for us because the deeper and the deeper and stronger connection our members can get in, again, that right culture and environment. And it comes from the top, right? It comes from me. It comes from my leadership team. And we don't put up with anything that's less than that. So I have asked a few people to leave in the past because they just weren't aligned to it, and that's fine. And then through that, through the structure and the strategy that we have, we partner everyone. So every month they get a business partner where they, you know, keep each other accountable during the month, but then they also, you know, get to know each other. How can they refer to each other? How can they support each other better? So we encourage collaboration. We also, you know, monitor and track referrals. So there's a whole heap of different levels within that, but it all comes down to, if you don't have a relationship with someone, we will never pressure you ever to refer to them because that just doesn't fit with me.
Yeah, I guess what you're doing there is it's an evolution of other business networking or relationship marketing models that have existed in the past, whose names I won't mention, that you've perhaps framed much better. And, you know, is that fair to say? Or
and those models are very successful, right? So they you know, when you're starting out in any business, you definitely look at what everyone else is doing. What do you like about what others is doing? What don't you like? And one of the big things that I find when people come to us is that they may have been to one of those groups, and you know, I've had some people that had to go to therapy afterwards. I kid you not. experience was. And what I found is that for women generally, we are very good at relationships. So we want to do business with people we know, like, and trust. So you don't need to pressure people if you create the right environment for them and you support them. Because I tell you what, anyone who's ever had my back, I would have their back tenfold. Yeah. You know, like, you just do that law of reciprocation. It's so evident. So, you know, if you come from that place of wanting to help someone else first, that comes back to you all the time. And that's not just, you know, for business. That's in everything.
I did one of those groups for about 18 months, and I don't think I needed therapy as I came out of it, but it was – the funny thing is they're quite cult-like, and I guess that's what you're building as well. You know, you're building a cult. You're not going to, you know – I mean, you're not going to camp out in a house with lots of guns and defend yourselves, but – well, you might do if that's what you guys do at the Christmas party or something. But
we call it a community because it takes a community to raise a family. Yeah. It takes a community to raise a business.
Yeah, but there's a lot of cult-like behavior in these kind of things, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because, you know, where you see really successful brands, what they've done is they've created a cult behind them. You know, you've only got to look at Apple. You know, there's people that would die for Apple out there. You know, that's kind of the sort of thing that they've done. So, I guess one of the questions I was going to ask you in that is with relationship marketing, there's obviously a massive element of trust involved in that. You've got to trust that when you refer someone or you pass on someone's details, that they're going to almost deliver a level of service and a level of engagement that you would have delivered if it had been your business. How do grow that trust? I mean, that's got to happen over a fair amount of time. Is there a risk that, you know, that you're damaging your own reputation by referring to, you know, by passing on another business details, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the case. You know, I could refer my sister and she could do a shitty job. Mm. You know, there's always that thing that you don't have control over. And I suppose the only thing that what we do is by putting the structure in place where people get to know each other. Ultimately, it's up to the individual whether they choose to or not. And we do have a contract that when people come in that they sign that says that they will, you know, if they are referred by anyone in the group, that they would, you know, deliver extremely high quality and all of that as well. So we've really only had a couple of cases in the 3 years where that's happened, and we have a, you know, a process in place. But yeah, it's just, it's like with anything, you know, I can recommend someone to go watch a movie and they could hate it.
Mm.
Ultimately, you can only share your experience. If that person chooses to work with them or not is really up to that other person.
If you're one of those people that in a networking situation or a group situation tends to, you know, clam up, hide in the corner, not talk to anyone, what are some of the, and I suspect you get some of those within your, you know, within your groups, how do you help them sort of break the ice and settle in?
Yeah, that's a really great question. It's something that I hated going to other networking events. Yeah. Sometimes I would even sit in the car just like, oh my God, because you don't know anyone and you're walking into this room of complete strangers. And then I would always just hang out at the bar and hope that I found someone that, you know, had similar wine taste as me, and then you could just randomly talk about nothing.
Someone that wanted to drink as heavily as you. That's
pretty much. Yeah. Okay, enough, you know, you have to drive home. So because, you know, it's awkward. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how our community works is, so our members are like a member for a year. So they sign up for a year, and we do allow guests to come in to any of the events, and they can, you know, try it out and see what they think. So we know the people that are coming. And so what happens, we have a very high touch process before they even get there. So they'll get a phone call from us or from myself or from one of my leadership team. They will also get, you know, a series of countdown emails, which really explains how things work and, you know, what they need to prepare to come. The community leader will text them before the meeting, you know, to personally introduce themselves and say, look, this is my number, you know, park here and this. They really feel warmly welcome before they even get there. And then when they walk in the room, literally they are met by the highest energy, big arms, like we're big huggers.
Yeah.
So, you know, those barriers get dropped pretty quickly. Yeah. We don't, like, as part of the leadership training, like one of the key modules is, and I say, I never want to walk into one of your meetings and see a guest sitting by themselves. Like, so it's just not what we do, because I remember that feeling, and it's a horrible feeling of isolation and not fitting in. And we are not clicky group. We are not a bitchy group. We don't complain. Like, culture is so important for me. So when that guest walks in the door, the leader knows exactly who's coming, who's expecting. The other members know how many guests are coming and to keep an eye out for them. They get welcomed in so warmly. There is no sitting in the corner. No one puts my guests in a corner.
It's great when you can slip a Dirty Dancing reference into a podcast.
Yeah.
I actually did a mentoring session the other day for a government, and one of the guys around the table slipped in some 50 Cent lyrics to his mentoring. So I was like, you know, hats off when you could do that.
Bravo.
That kind of leads me quite nicely to the second thing we're going to talk about with you, was the personal branding thing, which is obviously another passion of yours. Explain to me why personal branding is so important for people.
Look, I mean, there are so many businesses being started all the time. Now, does that mean that, you know, you have heaps of competition and no one's going to know who you are? Absolutely not. But you need to be able to stand out from the crowd. I mean, the younger generation especially are wanting to get behind a brand that stands for something. You know, there's some really cool, I use this example in my mastermind, you know, there's a really cool business called Thank You. You know, they do the soaps and corporations have got behind them, and they're all in my bathrooms. And, you know, every time you're on the toilet, you can read what, you know, what the organization's about. And there's a little code that you can track your impact in, you know, world sanitation and whatever their cause is. So, you know, standing out is really important and having a cause. And one of the things that, like, you know, there's a whole heap of different people that I love, but it's always for different reasons. You know, some people, it could be, you know, you've got to be super aligned to what your message is, you know, with who you are, like that congruency. I remember after I bought out my business partner at the end of last year and did the rebrand, it really allowed me to step into who the hell I am.
Yeah.
And because when you run a business with someone else, I mean, she's fabulous, but you're trying to be kind of like meet somewhere in the middle. And Real Entrepreneur Women has allowed me to just go, oh, hang on, who am I? What do I believe in? What do I stand for? And what am I just not okay with anymore? And by getting really clear on that, it's allowed me to go in a very strong direction in my message, in my copy, in my videos I put out, even in the brand images and stuff. And that's how you stand out. People want to get behind something. You know, if you're a coach or a strategist or a, you know, any kind of company where you're helping them, people want to know that if they turn to you, that you're going to be the right person. You're going to have the solid foundation. You're going to have that fire in your belly, that you're going to do whatever it takes to help them get the transformation that they want. So if you just want to be a coach or any product and you're like, oh, you know, my product's great, but your product has to stand for something. You have to stand for something. You have to have a voice, because the voice is what's going to attract like-minded people to you. Like if you think about who your dream client is, you have to know who they are, what keeps them up at night, what do they desperately desire when no one else is looking? You know, what are they crying about? What are they praying over? All of that, if you can deeply understand them and you know what you stand for and how you can help them, then you're just talking directly to that person and, you know, creating a following and creating, like, you know, all of these people around you who are your dream clients. It becomes so much easier, but you have to know who you are. And that comes over time.
100% agree with everything you're saying there. A lot of people that were sitting there going, right, well, I want to sort my brand out. I mean, I think the big challenge is the where do you start? What would be, you know, what would you suggest that, you know, if someone sat down to you and says, you know, Sophie, I need to sort out my personal brand. What are the first couple of things that they could be looking at?
The first thing that I talk to someone about, and some, I think, like, brand is like a really big umbrella, right? Mm. So there's the personal brand, the business brand, but ultimately it's like, what is the problem that you solve? And why can you solve it better than anyone else?
Yeah.
So if you can clearly identify what that is, I mean, if you look at, like, I was just thinking about Janine Ellis, you know, from Boots Juice. I've seen her talk many times. I love what she, I mean, she's on The Survivors. Like, I've seen her on so many different things, but she's always her.
Yeah.
You know, she's got a great story. She can connect with people through her story of, you know, how she overcome, how she got started. Her brand, like her personal brand, it stays really consistent no matter where she shows up. Mm. And so that getting really clear on who you are and what you stand for, those key questions, like, I'm not okay that there are women out there who are growing their business. They're completely isolated. They're frustrated and they don't have the support around them that they need or the strategy to make the money and to grow the business that they deeply desire. Like, I'm just not okay with that. Mm. So now that I know that I'm not okay with that, I talk about that and I create my content and my trainings and my modules and my membership all around that. So when you're looking at creating a brand, it's like your personal brand. It's, well, who the fuck are you? Why would someone want to work with you over Simon?
Yeah.
And it comes down to the relatability and that word real. And sorry for swearing, but I say that if my members like, but some people probably don't like that I swear, whereas others, they fucking love it. And
it's a sign of being trustworthy, Sophie. Everyone says, the more you swear, the more trustworthy you are. Gee. So, you know.
And you said, and
you said at the start of this podcast you weren't going to swear, so that, you know, you've.
Yeah, but you got me talking about the fire in my belly. Do you know what I mean?
I know. Like, I know.
That's the real. But that's what attracts people to me.
Yeah.
But it also repels some people from me. But that's okay because I'm not for everyone. So when you're talking about a brand, I mean, Ingrid Arn is one of the coaches I've worked with before. Now, she is, I mean, she drops the F-bomb all the time, but she puts herself out there in all of her glory and she doesn't give a fuck what anyone thinks about her. Mm. And that to me, that it's her congruency with her brand and who she is that has attracted me to her, because I wanted that congruency within my life and within my business. And that's what I teach with my clients. It's like, there is no one else like you. So you need to figure out the supercharged version of you and get really clear and get the language and the messaging around that that allows you to communicate who you are and what you stand for with power. And then that's what you base your brand around. The colors and everything, that all comes after you create that.
This leads me nicely to my next, one of my final three questions. You must hear a lot of people talk. You just mentioned Janine Ellis and so on and so forth. Who do you enjoy listening to or reading? Who gets Sophie inspired every morning?
That's a really great question. So for me, I've worked with, and you know, I'm also mentored by Mark Bilton. He used to be the CEO of Gloria Jeans Global, and now the owner of Thought Patrol. And I've worked with him now for a few years. One of the things, you know, like my members always ask, oh, who's your favorite, you know, what books are you reading and podcasts and all of that, which is awesome. But I think like pick a couple and then listen with that, because one of the things that I find really distracting for me is, you know, trying to listen to all of these different things and then you have all different voices in your head. And I want to pay, I want to work with the best in the world, right? So if I'm going to work with a marketing company or if I'm going to work with a coach or a strategist or a mentor or whatever, then I'm paying to listen to them. And I want to get their message and their strategy and their thoughts really ingrained in myself, I suppose. So at the moment, you know, I definitely listen to a lot of Ingrid Arna because I'm loving a lot of that. I have read lots of books. I'm actually not a massive reader, so I prefer to do the podcasts or the audio and stuff.
Yeah.
And I find that I've done a lot. So for me, it's all about implementing and now teaching as well.
What about some other brands that you like? You know, things that you buy all the time and you go, I mean, you mentioned Thank You, you know, Thank You Water and all those kind of things, but other things that you look at, maybe some, even if there's some niche ones that you know of that other people don't know of?
Look, there's one that always comes to mind. And look, again, I'm a massive raving fan because of what they stand for, but it's Dinner on the Table. So Dinner on the Table is a social enterprise. They're based in Sydney, but they are expanding across Australia. And they cook fabulous meals, home-cooked meals for you. You can have them delivered to your door, like for the week or ongoing.
Yep.
But the money goes into putting dinner on the table for families with disabilities. So Rachel Golding is the founder, and she's got a lot of the university kind of, you know, background, and they're looking at, you know, what impact does it have when you bring the whole family together and they are eating healthy every day. So that really inspires me. One, because my kids will always eat Rachel's dinner probably over mine. But also it's like that guilt-free, because you also know that, well, this is actually helping someone. And she looks at the whole family as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of support out there for the disabled person, but there's not for the carers and the people that are around them. So, you know, the difference that just having dinner cooked for you and not having to think about it every day has had a massive impact on a lot of people that she's been able to help.
Okay.
The other one, which isn't really a niche one, but one of the brands that really impressed me is the Domino's Comeback Story.
All right. Okay.
Do you know about that?
No, go for it.
So Domino's, probably, you know, nearly 10 years ago, like their pizzas were terrible. So their share price plummeted to about $9. They ended up bringing in a new CEO, and he did a massive customer feedback project where they did a lot of, you know, when you get, what's it called, when you get people into a room and they ask them questions.
Focus group.
Yep. Heaps of focus groups and stuff like that to really understand what's wrong with the pizza and listening to the customer. Mm. And, you know, putting the customer at the center of your organization is one of the smartest things you can do. And so what they did was they got all these focus groups and people were telling them, your pizza tastes like cardboard and it's terrible. But what they did was they used that then to improve.
Yeah.
And I remember there was like, they would have big things up in Times Square of real live verbatims that their customers were telling them on how shit their pizza was. Right? So they made it hugely public, but they made their turnaround massively public. So they made sure everyone knew how bad their pizzas were.
Yeah.
And then they turned it around. And then there's some videos on YouTube you can have a look at, like Domino's Comeback. And then they even went back and door knocked on the people who came into the focus groups with the fresh pizza with the head chef.
Right.
Saying, hey, did you say that our pizza, our you know, crust tasted like cardboard. And the poor people are like, oh my God, yes. Yeah. And they said, try this, right? So they really turned around their company simply by listening to what their customers thought and then improved on it. And I mean, that's something that we teach. And I know it's something that IAG do. But, you know, listening to the voice of the customer and innovating and growing rather than just trying to hide. You know, most people don't ask for feedback because they don't want to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
They take it so personally, right? They forget that, well, how can you improve if you actually don't know? And then when you know, if you're going to ask, make sure you do something with it. So one of my things is like, if you fuck up, you just need to own it, learn from it, improve, and let your clients know that you've been able to do so with their help. I mean, if someone was a ranting customer and they gave you feedback, but then because of that feedback, you were able to do something about it, go back to that customer and say, hey, I know you thought I was shit, but thank you for telling me because now I've done this and I wouldn't have been able to if you didn't tell me.
That's a great story. I mean, you know, I didn't actually know that about Domino's in the US, but
$160 their share price went up to from $9.
Wow. And all from sitting there and actually listening to your customers.
Yep, and taking it.
Who'd have thought that was the solution, eh?
Yeah. What? Crazy.
look, we'll wind this up now, otherwise you and I suspect you could probably talk for a lot longer. and you promised me you wouldn't swear at the start, and there's just been F-bombs left, right and centre. So... So I'm going to wind this up because I'm absolutely disgusted, Sophie. At least we didn't do the word that you had to explain to your husband that we weren't allowed to do on here.
Oh yeah, what is that word? Well, I have a saying, right? It's not my saying. I stole it from someone. I don't know who said it, but it's like, I don't care what you think of me, Simon, unless you think I'm fabulous. And in that case, thank you because you're right.
Brilliant. The last thing I was going to ask you is, if someone wants to get hold of you, if they want to ask you a question, if they want to come along to one of your events, what's the best way of them reaching out to you?
You can go to rewomen.com.au. Our website's being beautifully redesigned, which is great. Or you can just connect with us on Facebook. You can connect with me individually, or we have a free support group there called Real Entrepreneur Women. So if you're a woman in business or wanting to start a business, then you can join that free group and get some support, and make sure you jump in and say hi to me when you do.
Awesome. Look, thank you very much for being on the show today. It has been highly entertaining. I hope we get to do this again very soon as well.
That would be great. Thanks so much, Simon. Bye.
That's it from today. My name is Simon Dell. You heard an interview with Sophie Musumeci. Hope you enjoyed it. Go and check out her website and see if you can or contact her through a Facebook group. Other than that, please rate and review us on iTunes. Go back and listen to some of our previous episodes. There are some brilliant, brilliant people with some fantastic interviews in there. People often ask me what my favorite one is. I generally don't have a favorite because everybody's actually just really, really different in all of them. But if I did have to listen to one of them, if I was forced to listen to one of them again, I'd probably go back and listen to Glenn Richards from Shark Tank. So other than that, we will hear from you next week.